Hello, everyone, and welcome to Not Quite Hollywood. I'm Jamie.
I'm August.
And I'm just a guest, Joel Crabtree.
Joel Crabtree. John is out tonight, so for the next two episodes, we're going to have Joel here with us. And actually, funnily enough, we are going to talk about some pretty cool movies this time.
Yeah.
Divisively so, I guess.
But we are not talking about our communal movie, House.
Right.
We're not going to skip that episode.
That'll be next week, because we want to have John here for that.
Is there an orange cat in House?
Yes, there is.
Well,
I don't know.
You haven't seen it?
No. I'm going to.
I don't know. The cat isn't orange. The promotional, like the poster,
yeah,
is orange.
Yeah, that's all I know about it.
All right. Posters are orange. Full of cats. So, yes, we're going to talk about a different movie for August's film this week. But we want to get into Joel, our guest, his film. And but keep in mind, we're going to have a little discussion on Ghostbusters coming up here at the end of the show. And we're also going to talk about Coffee and Cigarettes, a late 90s classic.
It's a movie. We're not just talking about coffees and cigarettes and our favorite brands of each.
We could.
So the movie that I'm going to be talking about, I went to the Maine International Film Festival this past week, and their movie for the final night was Little Men by Ira Sachs. It's kind of a smaller story. It feels smaller, more human. About two kids who spark up a friendship after the family moves to, I'm sorry, was it the Bronx?
Was it
the Bronx or was it Brooklyn? I don't remember which one it was.
Urban neighborhood.
So it's a New York-based film. We get that.
One of the boroughs.
It's kind of a movie about gentrification in some way, which probably gives you an indication of which one it's about, which borough it's about, which I don't know New York well enough to remember, to be honest. The family moves there and two kids spark a friendship, but it's kind of tested when there's a dispute over a lease of a dress shop by one of the mothers. So essentially, it kind of puts to the test this friendship, and it kind of pushes boundaries of these two sides, this family dispute essentially. And I really liked it. I thought it was a genuinely authentic piece of, slice of life. I think we use the phrase slice of life a little too often, a little too easily. And I think Ira Sachs here, the director, really nailed it for me, at least. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if other people feel differently, but I'd love to hear some opposing views.
Well, is he alluding to you, August?
I think he is.
Maybe.
Weird.
I had seen this movie, too. So I was there at MIFF volunteering.
Keep in mind, we'll talk about MIFF in next episode.
Yes.
Very important.
Extensively.
Yeah.
I'd say I sat through probably about, turned out to be 90% of the movie.
Yeah, it's a short film. It's like 85 minutes long. Yeah.
Nice.
And
the conclusion's the best part. How'd you miss it? I'm partially joking, but not really.
Yeah, I do like that it is slice of life.
Right.
Like, it is very contained. I mean, it's not like high stakes or just like, it gets out of hand. It's very contained. But it was just the acting. Bran from Game of Thrones or whatever. He was
King Joffrey.
No, Bran. No.
I'm just kidding. I don't know who the fuck that was.
You don't know.
The only kid I knew.
Kid you knew, period.
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking though, right?
Was it Jake or was it Tony?
It was Jake.
Jake. See, okay, I like Jake.
I
liked both of them, actually.
I like Tony.
I was talking to, actually, my wife on the way home, and we were talking about it. She didn't like either one of them. And I tend to not like child actors. I tend to find that they're a little bit, they have to force it a little bit more than adult actors because they haven't truly lived. But in this one, I felt like they were both pretty genuine. And if you see, and this is where I think that I the character of Jake is an introvert for those who haven't seen it.
Mm.
It comes out in August. So August.
Cool.
Perfect.
Such terrible. So Jake is an introverted kid who is more into the arts And he has trouble connecting with kids his age.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony, on the other hand, is the opposite. He's very outgoing, very...
charismatic.
Yes, yeah. Very charismatic. And they somehow connect and they click. And that's how they become friends. So, I don't know. I felt like his introverted nature, I felt... To me, it felt, again, it felt very genuine, and you didn't stay for the end. But when you get to the end, I feel like you understand why a little bit more.
Okay. I mean, I know how it ends.
You do?
But it's just like his Jake's line delivery is just like so flat.
I bought it. I bought it.
And I do like Tony's acting, just because it's like... stereotypical kid from New York. He's like, oh, you old man. And just like the way...
I don't know. I felt like he...
Just the way he speaks. Just like, I don't know.
He's got that thick accent. I'll give it
a... Extremely thick.
And it's very... He's very loud and very confident in the way he talks. He sold me on that one scene with where he's in his acting class.
Oh, yes.
I love that scene.
That was the only scene I liked in that movie.
That's too bad. I don't know. It's
like, a great scene. Like.
It's a great scene. And the way that it kind of just... and again, this is the beauty of what Iris Axe does, is the way he just kind of lingers there and doesn't really move.
Mm-mm.
I just thought that it... And he had a tendency to do that. There's really no trickery in terms of... And very little movement in terms of camera work here. It's all pretty, pretty set, pretty steady. And it just kind of lets the story unfold in front of you for what it is, which is part of what I really liked about it. And I love Greg Kinnear, too.
Greg Kinnear was really good.
I like Greg Kinnear always. The Matador.
Is he in the movie The Matador?
Wait.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I've ever seen that movie.
With Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, it was actually on, it was showing on, I think it was Sundance TV, just before I saw this one. And it reminds me, every time I watch The Matador, it reminds me how much I actually like Greg Kinnear. And in this one, again, he's very believable as, he's the father of Jake, and he plays an actor who's fallen on hard times, essentially.
Yeah, pretty much has to do everything for free, like.
Yeah, and it's his just the way he presents it. It's just, again, it buys into the... I buy into that world that Iris Axe is selling me, because I feel like it's the real world, and that's what I loved about this film.
Oh yeah, I like that gentrification aspect to it. And Greg Kinnear's sister, fuck her, I hate her so much. She is just... Oh, she's a bitch. She's such a bitch.
I mean, that's the thing. See, for me, I wanted to hate her more, but she's disconnected from the situation.
Oh, yeah.
We're connected with it. You know, we as the audience, we see it from all these angles. And there are no winners and losers. It feels like, more than anything, everyone loses in the whole battle. And that's kind of the unfortunate thing. It's just sometimes the way life works out. No one comes out as a, quote, winner.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I don't know if this was, like, expanded upon in the last couple minutes of it, but I really like the one line that the shop owner said to Greg Kinnear about how you never visit him, and I was more family to your father than what you were. And I was hoping, like, that would get expanded upon, like, later, and, you know, maybe have a line when she says, you know, all the countless times I kept him company because he was depressed that you weren't around and that you weren't visiting him, even though you guys live in the same city.
Huh.
I was kind of expecting like a line of that coming out rather than her just saying that I'm more family than you.
I don't know. I think there's a moment in the movie when she clarifies a little bit more, but when did you leave?
It's when Greg Kinnear walked into the shop.
Oh, it was just before that. Or it was just after that, rather.
Yeah, I was going to say,
they have a little bit of a conversation. Right, and yeah, talk a little bit more about the relationship with him and his father. And his father, by the way, at the beginning, he dies. I forgot to mention that. I did a terrible job setting up this movie.
Oh, that's okay.
But
we don't do a great job either.
We don't do well, usually, so this is the norm. But yeah, so there is a little bit more of that. And they dig into a little bit more there. But I think there are these... And the other thing I like about this movie is that they don't fall into the traps that you could fall into with a story like this. I like that you know, Greg Kinnear doesn't get terribly... he doesn't throw any tantrums, and no one really gets...
So it's just like a minor one. It's a very small one in the car.
Oh, yes, that's right. He does. That's true.
After the premiere of the show.
I was talking more about his father, yes.
Oh, his father.
Yeah, in terms of his father, in terms of her shooting daggers at him, basically. Mm-hmm. Is it daggers? Taking shots, whatever.
Sure.
Shooting daggers.
Yeah, I like the idea of shooting daggers, but that's more with your eyes
than your
mouth. I think
it's like an eye thing, yeah.
Yeah.
taking shots, pot shots.
That's what I was saying, shots, but I just didn't want to say that. But anyway, yeah, so yeah, I like the fact that it didn't fall into a lot of the traps, and it goes against convention, because it is such a, I don't want to call it a simple way to tell the story, but it is a simple way to tell the story, and that's what I liked about mm-hmm. it. It didn't want to embellish it at all, and that's for me. That's worth it's worth its weight in gold.
I'm glad that there wasn't a car accident.
Oh my god! Because
like there's several scenes of them going on the sidewalk and like the razor and rollerblades.
Yes.
And I'm just like, one of them's gonna get hit. Yep. I know it's gonna fucking happen. And then it's going to cause the two families to be like, oh, you know, we got faced with this accident, so now we need to bond together and get over our problems. Doesn't happen. And I was like, thank God.
Because he avoids that. And that makes me, actually, that makes me feel, it reminds me in a way of Richard Linklater in Boyhood. There are these moments, and I'm going way, way back, not really way, way back, a couple of years.
Yeah.
So he does a lot of that stuff too, where he's playing in scenarios where the character could get potentially harmed or hurt, mm-hmm. or you're thinking that something bad's gonna happen because that's what Hollywood has trained you to think.
Sure.
Oh yeah.
And I remember the people at my screening. It was actually at MIFF. The people at my screening were all like, they were playing with like an axe or a knife or something, and everyone was gasping like, what's gonna happen? Oh, is he gonna kill someone? Oh no. And I'm like, no, he's actually not gonna kill anyone. It's just part of what this movie is. If you haven't figured that out by now, we're an hour and a half in, we got an hour and a half to go, then you know. But I really like this movie, and I can understand. If you didn't like Jake, you're probably not going to like the movie.
Nah, he's
See, if you didn't, I thought he did a fine job, and I know that, like I said, a lot of people may not. So
I mean, I'll meet you halfway.
All right. Well,
I didn't like it, but I would recommend it.
There you go.
I would definitely recommend watching it.
I will totally buy that.
Because, I mean, it does have a very interesting story, and, you know... It does well by not doing what other movies would do.
And I find it funny that you say it has an interesting story, because on the surface, and it's hard to explain, on the surface it sounds really, really not interesting at all. It's essentially a dispute over a lease. I mean, and who wants to watch a movie about a dispute over a lease? But here it is. It actually really works, the story.
And you can believe both sides.
Yes.
And so when you see that clash over this lease, it's like, well, you know, they do have to pay for, you know, the money to own the plot of land the building sits on, but she was getting a good deal from her father. And so it's just like, I don't know where to sit in this situation.
Right, and that's the thing. It really does
come on.
You can't pick one side over the other. You can say that the sister is, I don't know what word you might use, I'll just call her not always the most diplomatic.
No.
But I think that in general, it's a side. You can see both sides of the argument, and that's what really stresses. That's where the conflict comes from. And then on top of that, you add in the kids being best friends, and suddenly it just tears them apart, or it tries to. And it just causes this friction between these two sides. And these kids don't even know what sides are at this point.
Mm-mm.
I mean, they don't even care. Mm. So to me, that's really the crux of the whole film.
I'm being really reductive, but it's like a Romeo and Juliet for kids, for friends.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's super reductive.
I'll buy that.
Yeah.
But it sounds like interesting.
I thought so.
I think it's on my list of stuff I wanted to check out.
Have you ever wanted to see a middle school rave?
That part I didn't like, by the way.
It was just weird. Yeah, it was weird and awkward. I mean, I understand it. It kind of like ties in with the title, Little Man.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I thought, too.
It's just like, but still, it's just like weird. You've got like that song going on in the background about like, open the door, drink some more.
The 13-year-old DJ.
Like, were these 13-year-old kids drinking? It's Kool-Aid?
That scene, actually, that's the one scene in the whole movie where I didn't buy into the world that they created. Hmm. I understood why they did what they did. I understood why that scene is in there. But at the same time, it didn't work for me.
Okay. What about the line, I'm into older men?
What?
Yeah.
But that's how... Okay, so that's the thing about the maturity of young people. Young people are maturing at a rate that I don't even understand. So
yeah, that's true.
You know what? In that situation, in New York, I fully believe that would be said.
I mean, hell, I believe that here. It is really scary how fast people are growing up now. Like, when you get a kiss, like, and you're 10 years old, you're, like, elated for years. Well, months. You know, like, oh my god, like, that's the coolest thing ever. Now kids are getting laid, like, 12 years old.
Jesus.
Oh, probably mean... younger. I don't want to know. Yeah. At all. Ever. Don't write in, by the way.
I mean, they are. I mean, they are. That's part of, like, the whole... I mean, the whole movie is centered around this idea that these kids are these, you know, tiny adults. And they're not kids. I guess I should clarify. They're more, like, 13, I would say. 12, 13, give or take.
Yeah.
Yeah, that age range. Thank you. So it's at this weird truly coming of age range where, you know, everything starts to kind of change, and I think that you, if you stuck around, you would have seen a little bit more.
Well, yeah, I know the ending.
Well, let's not talk about it. I don't want to spoil it because it's not out. But it's for what it is.
It does have an interesting ending.
It does. It's actually it's the thing that keeps you thinking. Like, on the way home, I have a long drive from Waterville to Orrington. And on the way home, I'm like, you know, I'm thinking about this movie. And I'm like, that ending is the thing that I keep coming back to. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating because it's not so explicit or direct. But it totally flips the movie a little bit on its head. And it just kind of makes you, you know, reconsider everything you just watched in a lot of ways. And it's great, and it's wonderful, and then you know, and it's subtle, and that's what I love about it. Ira Sachs, I'm definitely gonna check out a lot more of his movies.
What else has he done?
You've had to ask.
The name sounds familiar.
Brothers with Goldman. Goldman
yeah, Sachs. Right.
That's nice how he got these films funded. Okay.
Right. Love is Strange.
Yes. I haven't seen. And again, there's another one, Keep the Light On. Is that what
Keep the Lights On.
Keep the Lights On, yes. That I also haven't seen, but it was in my Netflix queue, and then I don't think it's streaming, so.
Married Life.
Which I haven't seen either. I haven't seen any of his work other than this, which is sad, but.
40 Shades of Blue?
Well, I mean, you can't get every director's movies.
You can't, but this one, I like this work enough so that I'm definitely going to go back and check.
He's been at it for a while.
Yeah, his other stuff.
Yeah, shorts in like 92.
Speaking of shorts.
What?
Hey.
Speaking of shorts.
I smell a segue coming.
Segway is back.
Yes, this is actually a really great one because the movie that I watched was Coffee and Cigarettes by Jim Jarmusch.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
Jarmusch.
I say Jarmusch. I don't care.
Jim Jarmusch.
I don't care if I'm wrong or not.
Fine.
Jarmusch.
I've heard both.
2003. Which was actually kind of surprising.
I thought it was late 90s.
It's the same year. Like, that's the weird thing about, like, early 2000s is how close they look like the 90s.
Sure.
And, like their dress and hairstyle and all that stuff. Let's see. Plot of Coffee and Cigarettes. I guess the only thing that ties it is that it's conversations over coffee and cigarettes. And I would say that the big pull of this film is... the people that appear in these shorts. We've got Tom Waits paired with Iggy Pop. Alfred Molina and Steve Coogan.
Wow.
Okay. Kate Blanchett pulls a doubleheader and plays two people in the same scene. Her and her cousin. And Jack and Meg White, which I'm a huge fan of the White Stripes, and that's kind of how I originally found out about this movie. Going into this movie, I thought it would be just like these two people because they go by their first names and they kind of like act like they exist in reality. And they would just tell each other interesting stories about their career or whatever. But it actually turned out to be kind of like improv scenes. Every short is so bizarre. in the way they communicate with each other. Like the Tom Waits and Iggy Pop, it's like two guys, you know, that meet up and you're like, okay, they're going to be kind of friends and go bond over music or whatever, but they spend the whole entire time just being antagonistic. Well, actually, more so Tom Waits against Iggy Pop. Like, Iggy Pop will bring something up, and Tom Waits will be like, well, what are you trying to say about that? Like, one is Iggy Pop's like, there's like a little lull, and Iggy says, there's a drummer at the studio that I've been playing with, and he's really good. I should give you his contact information. And Tom Waits just looks at him and says, why do I need to have him on my album? Am I not a good enough drummer for my music? And Iggy's just like, no, that's not what I'm saying. Just so it's like really interesting conversations. Probably one of the most notable ones is GZA and RZA for Wu-Tang Clan with Bill Murray as their waiter.
Weird.
I feel like it's, you know, the thesis of this movie. It's like that combination of those three people should not work, but it just fucking does in some really weird way. The improv is just very stilted and strange, and I think that's what keeps this movie going on. And I'm just talking out my ass, so I need some questions.
So wait, okay, They're a series of shorts, and they interconnect somehow?
No.
It's kind of a tangent, but this is the first time Bill Murray did something that's kind of against his grain when he started doing, like, Life Aquatic, and because Lost in Translation was the next year, I believe, correct? 2004?
Give or take.
Yeah.
So, like, the idea is that he started doing that, and then he did Broken Flowers with Jim Jarmusch again.
Yeah.
Which I haven't seen yet. I need to see it. I know I do. And then, of course...
I haven't seen that.
His Wes Anderson era, we'll call it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
his Wes Anderson period.
Because, I feel like he did disappear for a while.
Yeah.
And then he came back. And, I mean, now he's practically solely indie films, except for this summer.
That'd be a great segue. We're not done yet.
Yeah.
Segue time.
As a pre-mature
segue. It's so easy. How many shorts are there, give or take?
Say about 8 to 10
okay.
different shorts. There's a lot of other actors and artists and entertainers that I didn't list on here. I mean, that's all that they are.
Sure.
There's a few other people that I recognize, but these are probably the most notable ones. The Alfred Molina and Steve Coogan bit is fucking hilarious.
I think I have actually seen that one.
Alfred Molina gets like Steve Coogan to sit down. And Alfred Molina's like, I've been searching through the family tree, and I found out that we're cousins. And it just gets awkward. It just kind of like that awkward Steve Coogan, Coogan humor. If it's improv, like they have just like a kernel of idea and then just improv around that, they do a fantastic job. I don't know, it's a very interesting concept. I like that. Just small little shorts. They don't sit too long.
So Jim Jarmusch, unlike a lot of other directors, has kind of held on to black and white.
Mm-hmm.
This is in black and white, correct?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So what do you think it is about, you know, he did the Johnny Depp Dead Man in black and white as well, not too many years before this. Is there something there?
I feel like it antiquates it, but it also makes it kind of like long-lasting by just like putting it into two colors or whatever.
Right.
Like, it gives that old-timey feel, but it doesn't make it flashy to where it's going to be outdated.
Right. So it doesn't become years. Like... So you're watching it in 2016, and in 2003, 13 years ago, it still holds up just as well as it did.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. I get that. And does Bill Murray play Bill Murray?
Yes.
Okay, just making sure.
Yep. Bill Murray plays Bill Murray. He's, like, hiding out, apparently. Gets time away from the celebrity life, and that comes into the humor a little bit in the bit, because they're like, well, why does it matter? If they come in and they see you, they're going to recognize you, even if you're in that outfit.
And I love Wu-Tang Clan, so...
You've seen that bit, right?
I have, yes.
Okay.
That's why I bring up the fact that he's Bill Murray.
Now, I think it's RZA?
Yes, the RZA.
The RZA. Donnie Digital or whatever his name is, or Bobby Digital Bob. I can't remember. But he's going on about alternative medicine. And I'm like, is he really actually into alternative medicine? Or is he just doing this for the bit? And that's another interesting aspect of it, is how it just blends in. Like, the Jack and Meg White bit, it's like Jack is showing Meg White his Tesla coil. And while watching like a documentary, I can't remember what the name, Play It Loud or something, or It Might Get Loud, where it has Jack White, Jimmy Page, and The Edge from U2.
Yep.
And it starts out with basically Jack White taking a plank of board, two or three nails, and like two strings for like a guitar and amp plug-in, and he like constructs a small little guitar out of fucking nothing.
Yeah.
And so it's like, did he actually make that Tesla coil? And he actually is showing Meg White? Is this part of the bit? And so that's that strange blend.
Yeah, yeah.
Of like real and fictitious.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Totally. And that's where that improv might, and I'm just, you know, I haven't seen it, so, but that's where that improv might come in terms of just like blending your own life with whatever, you know, character you're creating in your mind, you know, becoming the person who you really, I don't know. I just think you sold me.
Yeah. Don't try to get it on Blu-ray.
I actually have a copy at home.
On Blu-ray?
No, on DVD.
Okay.
Regularized DVD, no.
Because during MIF, I went and had to kill some time, so I went to Bulma's.
Right.
And I was just like, I was looking for coffee. I actually originally was looking for Only Lovers Left Alive.
Yeah.
Because I've seen that before.
I want to see that.
That was my first Jarmusch. And
oh, really?
Yes. I love that movie.
That's my first one.
Sin and Tilda Swinton, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's incredible. It's an incredible film. I love the Detroit setting. I love everything about that movie. And Anton Yelchin, who just died.
Yeah.
Which is a GD shame. But yeah, my first one was actually Ghost Dog, which has the RZA in it as well. I love Ghost Dog Way of the Samurai, for anyone who wants to ever talk about it.
You know, it's...
Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it.
I have a copy.
I've heard it mentioned, and like, I was like, okay, you know, all these people that I, you know, listen to on the internet, you know, I looked it up, and I saw the cover, and I'm just like...
It's a weird cover.
Well, yeah, what kind of movie is this? Just like, okay.
So cool. It's this such a cool film. This looks
cheesy as hell.
No!
And then I found out it was by Jim Jarmusch, and I was like, okay, you know, maybe this isn't going to be just really cheesy, urban samurai.
Oh, no, it's totally... Well, no, it's totally not cheesy at all. It's very much... It has those... It's like an urban samurai movie with a Jim Jarmusch, and I still say Jarmusch, and I'm going to continue that way until someone tells me otherwise, with that sort of twist. And I think that it has the RZA in it, and I think he did some of the music for it too, maybe all of the music, I don't know.
Sure.
But yeah, that film was what turned me on to Jim Jarmusch in the first place. Although I miss Coffee and Cigarettes, I definitely have it on my queue somewhere to watch, but... that one, I'll loan it to you. You know what?
Okay, yeah, all
I
right.
think I have it at home, actually. My real home.
Your real home?
Yeah.
Not your second
not my,
home?
Not my home I grew up in back in like, Pittsfield, but like, my real home.
I'm glad you brought up the music aspect of Jim Jarmusch's films, because in Coffee and Cigarettes, that was one of the great things, was like the music. Each cafe that I guess these groups of people meet up is different. And so each short has its own atmosphere.
Yeah.
And there's always some background music going along. And like with the Jack and Meg White, it was, you know, kind of something that was similar to their music. There was another one that was between, I think, two African-American French actors. And it was just kind of like some, you know, jazzy kind of like Cubano music going in the background. I'm like, it makes it just like believable.
Right,
like, these are conversations that probably do occur within...
Right.
You know, a little cafe just off to the side.
Perhaps that's the point of the film.
Exactly.
There you go.
It's just small little conversations and improv conversations.
I just looked at Jarmusch.
Yeah.
Jarmusch's filmography. I have never seen one of his films.
Oh, no.
Oh,
but
wow.
I read all the synopsis. I want to see every fucking one of them. Like, I feel like it's one of those directors you've just never seen anything of, but I really want to see his stuff.
Who's the you you're talking about when you say you've never seen any of?
It's,
you?
Sure.
Is that you?
Sure. Like, it's like, it's, fuck you.
pretty much, yeah.
He's a very underrated director. Like, Only Lovers Left Alive.
Oh, man.
Like, I just kind of found that in, like, in the obscure part of the internet. Like, that's really? How I found out about it.
And I
never saw it, like, in theaters. And even then,
it doesn't play in theaters up here, but
sadly.
Sadly. You have to go to Waterville for that.
Yeah. It played in Waterville?
Yeah.
Oh, totally. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. No, they. It's one of those that was on my radar because of him and because of the cast as well.
Oh yeah,
right? Yeah. So, but yeah, no, that one was on my radar. But I've followed his work somewhat. I'm not like a crazy fan. Like I'm a fan, but I don't know if he draws me into the theater always. I try to go see his work when I can. But mm-hmm. he's a brilliant little filmmaker. I don't call him little. I'm sorry. That was derogatory. He's a brilliant filmmaker, period.
Backwards yes. segue, little men.
Little men. Little directors.
Backwards segue.
Like the vehicle. You just back up.
We're not going back there.
So yeah, coffee and cigarettes. I mean, definitely if you want, just like a short little, quaint little movie to check out, I would definitely suggest it. Yeah, you can find it for like $3 or $4 on DVD.
Nice. Yeah.
I gotta watch it.
Super cheap.
But you should totally go back and check out his filmography because I haven't even started to explore all of his work, mm-hmm. but I've seen probably 4 or 5 films, and it's an experience.
I'd love to see. So I was in looking at his filmography, there were a couple shorts, mm-hmm. Coffee and Cigarettes and Coffee and Cigarettes 2. So I'd love to see the impetus for that kind of film. Like, I mean, obviously they're not going to be the same thing, especially if they're improv. They're not going to be the same type of film.
Yeah.
Which is funny that he had kind of like had the idea and then over time just made a feature out of it with people the people he amassed, you know, working with or people he knew in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
It's definitely a very eclectic group of people. I mean,
it's not in the DVD by any chance?
That's a question for this guy.
What?
I thought you had the DVD.
I do. I haven't watched
it. I've got the DVD too.
Is it on there?
Both have the DVD.
Short films?
Oh, maybe the short films are the films.
Maybe.
I don't know. There's no way he worked with these people in the late 80s, early 90s, before he was really like... You know, I think he had the idea, people he knew then, had some conversations, made some shorts, and then made a feature again.
I don't know. I mean, I'd have to research it and see who is within those shorts.
Yeah, it'd be cool to watch.
Because it may have just been something that he did maybe in between movies of just being like, oh, I got these two people, you know, come around in contact with them, I'm going to do this little short, and then like he did one or two, and he's like, you know what? Fuck it, I'm just going to make a whole movie of this. And then just threw all of them together.
13 years later. But so you said it's mostly improv?
I would have to say, yeah.
Do you know? Or are you just saying based on the conversation?
Do you know?
Well, I mean, you know, honestly.
Or does it just sound really natural?
Okay, it's just the dialogue is so weird and stilted, and there's a lot of pregnant pauses. And you can kind of see just like the gears starting to like turn and being like, I'm going to say this now. Kind of situation, or like reiterating 6 lines basically saying the same thing, or there'll be some topic and they'll just keep going back to that topic. So that's where it kind of felt kind of improv.
Do you think that took away from the experience?
I think it added to it.
Really?
I love his reaction. Oh, he sounded offended. He sounded so offended.
Reaction.
I feel like if it was scripted, it would come off as scripted.
Yeah, right.
And then it would just been, Jim Jarmusch is a pretty good writer, from what I can tell, for Only Lovers Left Alive. So, I mean, he probably would have done a great job, but it adds to that bizarreness by having these people do an improvish situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it says that he wrote it. Whether or not that was like the kernels of ideas to start
scenario
the conversation.
Scenario writer, you know?
Right.
I mean, documentaries have writers.
True.
Exactly.
True.
I don't know whether this film was improv or not.
I almost don't want to know until after I see it.
Oh, hurry up.
Are you going to tell me? Don't look it up.
I'm not going to look it up. No. But I too want to know the answer to this because...
Yeah.
I'm sure the listeners at home would love to know as well. I'm sure that most of them know. All 13 of them.
All 13.
Because they have access to the Internet Movie Database.
What is that, though?
What is the database?
Yeah.
It's a database of cinema. It's great.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I didn't have to explain it.
It's a website, too.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's a website.
Yeah, it's a website on the internet.
What is the address for this website?
It's the imdb.com.
Yes, we got a sponsor.
They're going to pay us tons of money for that ad right there.
Now we're getting some money.
We're going to get like Avatar money.
But yeah, so speaking of improv.
Yeah.
A movie
that does horrible improv.
I mean, you haven't seen it, so
you haven't seen it. You don't know.
I have seen clips.
My film this week is one I promised to hurt August with months ago, and that is the 2016 just released reboot of Ghostbusters.
And we're gonna get a second one because you went and saw it.
He's blaming me for it. You know, a little money it made. It opened second. It only made like
$46 million.
$46 million. by just 144, not including all the marketing they did. They'll do another one, but it's not going to pick up, if at all. I think the International's really bad, too. Yeah. I told you it wasn't going to do as well. I was afraid for a second because when we initially looked it up, the competition was not that good. But Secret Life of Pets really picked up.
Well, and on top of that, everything is underperforming. So true. It doesn't seem like people have an interest in seeing much of anything in terms of going to the movies this summer.
Right. Damn,
except for Dory.
Yeah, Dory's the highest animated
Dory's
film.
Just killing it.
Domestically.
Wow.
But anyway, enough of the
numbers.
Yeah, I can talk numbers all day.
So could I. It's fun. Remember how I said months ago, the same episode, that I'd rather see Ghostbusters than Warcraft?
Yeah.
And then you brought up Warcraft.
Yeah.
And said it was pretty good.
What?
Yeah.
You didn't hear this episode?
I missed the Warcraft episode. I should just shut up. No, really? You like Warcraft?
Yeah.
What? This is a conversation for another time. Let's go back to Ghostbusters.
Well, I'll phrase it for you right quick.
Sure.
It is my favorite stupid, dumb blockbuster movie of the year.
You got two words, right?
Oh, did I say two words?
Stupid, dumb, yeah.
Oh, well, yeah,
it's
yeah, stupid,
so
dumb.
Four. Movie? And
it's also a film. It actually is a movie. I love Duncan Jones. This is not that, and this is a way off topic, but I gotta stand up for this one.
Well, we'll talk afterwards.
We'll talk after. We'll talk offline, but I just gotta say, did not work for me. Anyway,
is
Ghostbusters.
Now, am I the only one that has seen this Ghostbusters?
You are at the moment.
That's fine.
I'll see it.
I saw a lot of pictures of people just, like, by themselves in the theater watching it. I was just like, oof.
There were that many people. And I went on a Friday night at 9 o'clock, and there was like, 20 people, 25.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, that's opening weekend. So, okay, it definitely does not deserve the vitriol it got online. Which, by the way, whole other topic, was Sony trying to market the film.
Oh, yeah.
They pushed, it's been documented. They pushed the male audience saying they didn't want to see the film, regardless of what they said. Like James Rolfe, the angry video game nerd, made very clear points about why he didn't want to see the film, not because they're female. He made very valid points, the reason why he didn't want to see the film, and they took it as face value. He's sexist.
Yes.
And then, I guess there are a lot of females who also said the same similar things. I don't want to see this. They did not mention those at all.
But, in terms of marketing, I do have to say that just looking through comments and looking through things that came about, there was definitely a backlash against the casting in the first place. There was definitely a backlash.
I can, sure. Yeah.
Sure.
Granted, there's backlash for every single damn movie, really.
There is. Like, especially for movies that are reboots or blockbusters of any type.
With established characters as well.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
Heath Ledger.
Heath Ledger.
There was huge
people
backlash.
People freaked
that.
Out about
sure.
That.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because up to that point, he never really played a menacing character.
Exactly. And they're like, that's like going to be a pretty boy playing a Joker.
Exactly.
Oh, but he was so much more than a pretty boy. And everyone should have known that in the first place. But
sure. But he was never got to the shine.
So the thing is, like, with established characters and especially with movies, there's always going to be backlash about, you know, the representation of them and not sticking
with
the norm.
Sure. But I definitely do think there was a strong bias for some fans. I'm not saying all or majority.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
For some fans, just because they were women.
Oh, definitely. I agree with that.
I get it. But I think they shone a light on that minority and really made that vocal minority a more prevalent force, right?
Uh-huh.
And I think they placated to the news media cycle, and really they brought up a lot of these comments, and there's some really nasty people out there. It's
yes.
Unwarranted.
100%. In fact, Leslie Jones just she just had to leave Twitter because
really?
Of the backlash. They were going at her so aggressively that she just left the whole medium of Twitter.
Okay.
Is Twitter a medium?
Yeah,
it's
a
medium.
Yeah, it's a social media, whatever. Anyway,
social media.
You get the idea. But anyway, so I just think it's a shame that these people are allowed. I mean, you know, it's a shame that these people are allowed to do what they do and just troll and continue to do it so viciously. You know, with that said, go ahead, keep going.
So here's the funny thing, right? The irony is
you loved it.
No, the irony is the best part was the cast.
Yeah,
the four females were the best part, and I mean that because I love all these ladies, right? I think for the most part, well, here's this. I shouldn't use the word love.
I love all these ladies.
So Melissa McCarthy, I think when she's not playing the fat oaf, she's a great actress.
When does she not?
The Nines.
The Nines. Thank you. The Nines.
The Nines.
Or Gilmore Girls. Best film.
I've never watched that show.
I love Gilmore Girls, but whatever.
But I mean, like, even like, so she kind of moved away from it, right? So Heat had some, but Heat was really funny. The Heat, I should say.
I didn't see The Heat.
It's all right. See, Bridesmaid, she was the fat oaf. That's really what put her in the limelight at that point. Well, that and Mike and Molly. Spy was a lot less of that. Like, there was one scene where she fell off her bike, and they used that in the trailer, but most of it's, like, a good character story. Like, her character arc was, like, a well-written...
You see, actually, I love the cast of Spy, and I wanted to see it, but her falling off the bike in the trailer made me not really want to see it, because it wasn't funny.
That's pretty much the only shitty thing in that movie.
Well, sorry.
Like... You know, that's the thing. They marketed that way because people are used to her being the fat oaf.
Sure.
Which sucks. But, so anyway, I like all these ladies. The rest of them, Kristen Wiig. I'm not saying love anymore because he gave me shit.
You're giving me right hyperbole. Ladies.
What's wrong with that?
I don't know. It just sounds kind of like, I don't know.
I'm like ladies, sexist. You know?
Yeah.
Like ladies, man.
You're the internet's going to be after you, man.
They don't listen to this podcast. If that would happen, that'd be great. Please.
No.
Then our numbers go to one.
Yeah, me.
But no, keep going. Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. The remaining three ladies are. I'm not even trying to. Are from Saturday Night Live. Kristen Wiig, Leslie Jones, and Kate McKinnon. And I've liked all their work in the show. And Kristen Wiig's done a lot of different kind of films as well since her tenure at SNL. But see, I think the biggest problem with this film, and we'll get into all the problems with this film.
Oh, there's lots.
The biggest problem with this film, it was not rated R. It's a lot of improv, right? And he's worked with Melissa McCarthy before. These girls are all improv. Like with SNL, they kind of change things up. I mean, they've done a lot of... Leslie Jones is more sexually charged in her humor because she's like a big, you know, intimidating lady, but she's like really like loves her joke, a lot of jokes about sex. The idea that if this film was a rated R film, I think it'd be easier to let it kind of wash over you. It would be funner to see where they would go. They hint towards some like dirty humor, very light stuff, but I think there would have been more of an opportunity to make it their own.
Yeah. Well, I heard there was a queef joke.
There is a queef joke.
Does it involve Slimer?
No. Something about fire and came out, didn't come out the back, came out the front.
Oh, wow. And it doesn't involve Slimer?
No. Unfortunately. No.
It's just some improv line, probably out of the middle of nowhere. Like.
Probably. I would say some of the jokes that are improv, you can tell, and they suck. That's why I asked about coffee and cigarettes. Can you tell? Because this was painfully obvious sometimes. And the story's really boring. The villain's really forgettable. Stupid plot. Two of the characters who really fucking annoyed me, though, Chris Hemsworth.
No! Yes. Chris, don't tell me that.
It's funny because everyone's been saying, like, oh, he's the funniest one of the girls.
No, he has a couple. So he's like a really fucking stupid person. Like, if there's a loud noise, he'll cover his eyes.
That's kind of funny, actually.
The first couple times...
Way to blow it for me.
The first couple times, wow. He's kind of like an idiot. Like, okay, fine. But it gets really grating. Kate McKinnon is in a different movie. She's over the top. She's completely different from the rest of the girls and how they're acting. And she gets grating sometimes. But overall, it feels like it's withheld. And it's a movie made in 2016. So it's that kind of comedy, right? There's an air to an 80s film that you can't really replicate anymore. Like, and we talked about how the 90s cheesy Independence Day, like... A few episodes back, how that can't, like, Independence Day Resurgence, it can't be replicated.
Oh, yeah.
That's a bigger problem of rebooting a film like this, especially this far out. Had they made a sequel in the 90s, like they were trying to do, would have been better off, I think, for the history of the film. I don't think it needed to be remade. Okay, let's ask some questions, because I want to talk about it.
I'll give you my opinion. Like,
sure.
I have not seen this movie, but based from the trailer, it just showed all the points of a movie that I did not want to see. All the jokes that they threw in there, I didn't find funny.
The power of Patty compels you.
That one, I have to admit, I did not find. I had no interest in that. With that said, I do still want to see the movie because actually, I really like Kristen Wiig.
Yeah,
I find her really. I find her really funny, and actually, I think that. What was she in recently? Diary of a Teenage Girl, which she was really good in. Yeah, she was really good in that. So I always give her the benefit of the doubt always, even if it's not good, mm-hmm. I'll still give her the benefit of the doubt. And Chris Hemsworth. Does Chris Hemsworth keep his shirt on?
Jesus, no. There's got to be at least one scene.
I think he does.
What?
I think he does. Yeah.
They just lost my ticket.
Yeah.
He keeps his Australian accent.
Oh, that's nice.
Okay. Yeah, that's nice of it. That's not have to change it up every now and then. Man, he's just so dumb. He's just so dumb.
I saw a clip, and it was like when he's trying to do the logo for him, and it's like a hot dog over a house, and I'm like, how is that fucking funny? I don't know how.
Oh, Jesus, you're a fanboy, aren't you? Chris Hemsworth fanboy.
No. No, Chris, my Chris is Chris Evans over Chris Hemsworth.
Okay.
But, yeah, no, I don't know. I guess I want to see it. I'm intrigued by what they've done with it. I actually like the all-female cast, or the all-female Ghostbusters. I think that's a great touch. I'm not a huge Melissa McCarthy fan, to be honest, so she's not really selling me on this, and that's the problem.
Sure.
But at the same time, I'm more than willing to give it a shot, for sure, because, you know, I do stand by Kristen Wiig.
She's the only one that I like, actually, in that cast.
I don't watch SNL, so I'm not familiar with the other two at all.
I've tried watching SNL. That's another thing, is the humor, it just doesn't, I don't feel like it, I get it. I don't think it appeals to me. Is it fair to bring in some comparison to the previous Ghostbusters movie?
Go for it. That's valid in this conversation.
Okay. I mean, I didn't know if we can go that direction, but I understand that they need to make it modern. Kind of make it, you know, a modern blockbuster movie. But one of the things that made, like, Ghostbusters really good was how small and contained it was.
Sure.
Because it was not about ghosts and really saving the world. It was like watching this, you know, eclectic group of characters play off each other and deal with this new situation.
But it was a bit about saving the world as well.
Yes,
it was. The Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Definitely.
You do have to save the world.
When it got to the end. But I mean, they were not going against an army of ghosts floating all over the place.
And that comes from what you said about 2016, where literally you have to just throw as much CGI at the screen as you can and see if people can be entertained enough or whatever. So
make it extremely grandiose. I mean,
yeah.
I would say really, like, what made the fighting of the ghosts interesting in Ghostbusters, the first one, is because they didn't zap them right away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's Slimer's the first ghost that they go after, right?
Yeah, yep. My boy.
And yep. It's like about, like, what, 1 or 2 minutes of them just trying to get him over the trap?
Yeah.
Like, he's just going all over the place, and they're like, I don't know what the fuck we're doing.
But do they do that here?
Do they do that? Or is it just kind of like instantly?
Yeah, they trap one fucking ghost. I think they only trapped one on screen, one ghost in Ghostbusters, I think. I watched it recently.
That's in preparation. Right, you did. Yes.
Yeah.
Let's talk about another really egregious issue I've had with this film.
Okay.
Oh my god, that's my word.
The cameos.
Oh,
spoilers.
Don't spoil me. Don't spoil me. No.
This is what we
go doing. Ahead. Spoil it.
Everybody who's alive from the Ghostbusters is in this movie. Obviously, Harold Ramis is not.
Whoa, whoa, whoa!
I know. He should be there as a ghost.
With special effects, you could totally recreate him.
Exactly.
Tastelessly. Yeah.
Freaking hologram that shit like Tupac.
At least do like a voice over a phone or something. Yeah.
The cameos are god-awful. The best one is Ernie Hudson.
I'm an Ernie Hudson fan. My brother actually got an Ernie Hudson autograph. He was at the Bangor Comic Con. Yeah. He got it for, not Ghostbusters though, but for Congo.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, nice. He got his Congo Blu-ray signed.
That's awesome.
That's obscure.
That's pretty funny.
Ernie Hudson.
Yeah. Don't know who he is?
No.
The Black Ghostbuster.
Okay.
Damn, man.
I didn't know if it was that or that character or the nerdy guy.
That's Rick Moranis.
Which is retired from acting.
Actually, Rick Moranis. Take it back.
He went on top.
He did. Okay. He did. Well, Honey, You Shrunk Yourself. So let's not get into that. So, the cameos are really bad. So like, there was a little on-screen thing where like Bill Murray plays a debunker.
They had that in the later, not in the first round of like advertising, but they definitely put that in the later round of advertising to kind of like sell people like, hey, Bill Murray's in it.
But he like he does in the past, whatever else it is, whether it be Garfield, the Ghostbusters game in 2010,
not like
he
Garfield.
Phones it in, and then he's a debunker, and then it's the stupidest fucking scene. Like, and he actually goes into the Ghostbusters compound. They just caught the first ghost they ever had, and he wants proof. I was like, well, of course you can't open the trap, because I'm here now. Like, and then so when they actually end up opening the trap, the ghost is like, atta girl, and he looks in the trap, and the ghost comes out, pushes him back out of the window, and he dies. And it's so fucking terrible. Everything about that scene is god-awful. And then the other cameos are really forced. So Sigourney Weaver is, yeah, she's in there. She's another terrible cameo.
But Rick Moranis is not.
No, he's not.
Never mind.
I know, he should be.
No shirtless Chris Hemsworth.
I know.
No Rick Moranis. What are we going to watch?
I know.
Okay, I made a prediction. Tell me if it is true.
Oh, okay.
Is there a cameo from the sports superstar?
Who's the sports superstar?
Any of them.
Like, any of them.
Oh, okay.
LeBron James or, you know.
Steph Curry. Would you recognize these people?
I would not recognize Steph Curry.
What?
Oh,
sure. I don't fucking watch basketball. I almost said baseball, despite you.
I don't watch baseball. Big Poppy Steph Curry.
None that I could tell.
Okay.
And
was there a scene where they, like,
there's no one that they showed, like, I didn't recognize who it was, you know?
Did, like, a medium shot, and it was just, like, there was no one else around them.
No.
Just, like, Michael the Phelps typical ones, there. Yes. Like
with the Times Square, like, whoa, there's some ghosts, and I'm Michael Phelps.
And everyone's just, like, 50 feet away because you can't have extras be around these sports superstars.
No.
I would recognize the cameo shot, okay?
Okay.
I would be like, why are they prominently featuring this guy? But they didn't do any of that.
What about the band? Because they crashed
band some
fucking
stupid
rock
fucking band. Oh my god!
Which band?
I don't know the band's. I don't think it's a real band.
Oh, it's not a real band.
I don't think so.
But they still that they do like the half, you know, music video shot or
No.
Really?
Huh. Like they come.
Surprise!
They're in the back of the stage. It's some venue there, and they come back and eventually get on stage and bust the ghost or whatever. That's the one they caught. Yeah, that's right. It's a fucking, like, dragon that's on Leslie Jones's shoulder in the trailer.
And someone pulls out a selfie stick and takes
it. It's fucking weird. Man.
Do you remember the Bobby Brown song from the second one, Ghostbusters 2?
I do.
Yeah, it's such a good song. Did they bring that back?
No.
Oh, that's a shame.
When they cut to, like, a shot of the Ecto-1 driving around the city and they had that fucking disgusting Fall Out Boy and Missy Elliott?
Missy Elliott, yes.
Oh my god, I wanted to fucking throw my cup at that.
You know, okay, I gotta say, I watched.
I spill it. Throw my cup.
I listened to the soundtrack actually on Spotify.
Why?
Because I was curious. I was driving, I'm curious, I'm like, well, what is this? I would say 50% of them are some sort of rendition of the Ghostbusters theme song that we've all come to know and love. And I'm like, you literally just have four or five tracks of pretty much the same thing. Like, how sad is that? Uh-huh. But no Bobby Brown. You're telling me we couldn't get, like, a Nelly and Bobby Brown, like, remix of what he did initially?
No.
Yeah.
I'm glad it didn't happen.
What?
They had Bill Murray come as a ghost debunker. Like, if you can do a cameo of the old cast...
Yeah.
Why not incorporate something like that?
Yeah, so they didn't want to like put the old cast in, which is really weird to me. So I know you're not a big fan of Max Landis. He had written a draft of Ghostbusters. I mean, goddamn, everybody has.
I've
right?
heard about this, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So his draft was, it was Egon's daughter was the lead, and it was a mix of guys and girls. They said it was more sexist to have all girls just to... It's like we talked about with Script Notes earlier in their episode about Writer's Room. You're trying to get... You're trying to go so far off the other edge, like, to get minorities, to get racial diversity.
Oh, yeah.
In this film, they're like, we need to get all women because we're not sexist. But that's exactly what sexism is.
But that's also kind of what Paul Feig does. I mean, he works with women.
Sure.
And he works with two of them historically pretty well.
Yeah.
In particular. So I don't know if I would go... I'm definitely not against it. I'm all for it. I do wish that Jenny Slate had somehow worked her way into this because I
she was
love
going
that.
To right.
I don't know.
At one point she was like rumored her. It was like her and Alison Brie.
I don't know.
Oh,
there were a couple
man.
Other like actresses
like
up for it. Maybe even like Emily Blunt. I don't remember the
Ooh.
Yeah. Right. I've been a lot better movie.
Emily Blunt.
Alison Brie.
Alison Brie.
Brie Larson. Throw her in there too. Why not?
Brie Larson and Zoe Saldana.
See.
So, oh, interesting. See, another franchise for her.
I think Jenny Slate is just one of the funniest people alive, period.
Sure.
So
she's from New York, right?
No, she's from Massachusetts, actually.
Oh, okay. Even better.
But no, she's I find her to be one of the absolute funniest people alive,
yeah.
Period. Like, her sense of humor, her style of humor,
yep.
To me, is and when they announced this cast, I was like, where is she? She deserves to be in this. Of course, she's in the pet movie, which is doing bang up numbers,
oh, yeah,
so
right.
Whatever, I don't really care.
I take it you've seen Obvious Child.
Yes, I love that movie.
Very good film. Isn't she in the new one, Don't Think Twice? Mike Birbiglia?
I don't know.
No, she's not. Maybe she is.
I don't know.
Hmm.
She also does some Drunk History episodes, which are great. I love her Drunk History episodes, and I love all Drunk History, which is a totally separate topic. But
it's the second time I've heard of this show.
Really?
Recently, yeah.
Oh my god, I love that show, and I love Jenny Slate on that show in particular. Her delivery is perfection as a drunk person, and as a sober person, I'm sure too.
I'm gonna do a Drunk History episode on film.
They've actually done some.
Paul Thomas Anderson?
No, they did Citizen Kane. Sorry.
Wow.
But you could do Paul Thomas Anderson, if you're interested.
Yeah.
If you're funny enough.
I would love to do it. Just get plastered.
It's a big if, Joel. If he's funny enough.
That's a huge if, guys.
Huge.
Yeah.
Telling you,
I'll just improv my way,
There you go.
Apparently, it got these four people into a Ghostbusters movie.
So, yeah. Anyway, it would have been cooler to have, even if Harold Ramis is still passed, to have them hand over the movie franchise. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You wanted Max Landis to do this thing.
No, I just wanted to acknowledge the old ones. It could have even worked well in the reboot, like, meta humor. Like, saying, like, oh, these Ghostbusters, they're ripping off the ones in the late 80s. Or, like, kind of like a reference to, like, exactly what people were saying on the internet. There was a cool little meta humor. They put their videos up every time they found a ghost. They put their video up on YouTube.
I've seen this.
And they're like, some comments, like real comments they pull from the internet, like trailers, like, ain't no bitches bust no ghost. It was one of the comments that was, I guess, real. Which is like, that was interesting, like, to do that. But that was like all the meta humor they had, which for that whole bullshit. And the movie was largely like,
every time social media pops up in a movie, I want to kill myself.
Damn, man.
Yeah.
Damn.
That's pretty intense.
It's super intense.
I would just say I'm a little sad.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to kill myself. Maybe I'm a little bit teary.
Okay, maybe that was slightly hyperbolic. I just want to put myself in a coma.
Just for like a week?
A week.
Oh, yeah,
one day coma.
One day coma is pretty cool.
No, it's not.
You get the rest up?
It depends on how you get the coma. How do you get there?
Drug induced, of course.
I want to bang my head on the seat in front of me every time social media pops up.
Okay, there we go. That's appropriate. That's an appropriate response.
Bam! Knock myself out, wake up when the movie's over, and be like, okay, that
wasn't
that bad movie.
Oh, Concussion is
great.
That Social Network wasn't too bad.
He's banging his head every 5 seconds.
That's
Jesse Eisenberg. Jesse Eisenberg was pretty good.
That's an exception.
What? Okay, we have to get to this next episode because we're going to mention something similar to this, so I want to bring this up. Yeah. I think, to wrap it up, this movie is not for anyone who watched the old films at all. It's for people who...
You definitely see that.
It's for people who like Paul Feig's films, I guess, and then that's why I'm kind of disappointed they didn't go hard R, because especially after Deadpool, they could have easily done it. They were already done shooting by the time that came out. But
I just don't see this as being a hard R. I just don't see this movie. I don't see
a
studio letting this be an R at all.
Definitely not. I can't. No.
No, so. I mean, they lose money. All these kids would want to go.
But are the kids going to this?
Are
Do they
kids?
Care
Probably
about
not.
Ghostbusters?
I've seen some inspiring photos on social media. Where you have these little girls who are looking up to like Kristen Wiig with a sense of awe.
That was cool.
And you know what? I hope they are, and I hope that even though I don't care how the movie ends up being or whatever, I do hope that this is the start of something bigger with women in film. And I hope that, I think that we have a tendency to think of the typical, the blockbusters have the white male who comes in and saves the day, and I hope that we're moving away from that. How about that? And I hope that kids are seeing that and we're moving forward. That's all.
I want to devil's advocate this.
Devil's advocate away.
Do you think there was little girls that were dressing up as Ghostbusters before this film?
I don't know if you were getting at the... Okay, I think there were people who grew up with it, maybe. But I don't know
maybe if... Maybe their parents showed them it.
Maybe, and that's a possibility.
I mean, I'm not... I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah, totally. And you can ask the question. I don't have the answer. But I think that it does...
I think it should have been a female director.
There you go.
Like, straight up.
Sure.
That would because you know what?
Like, we're not racist at all or sexist at all.
You know, people say that there isn't a good representation of women in film. But there's women in movies all the fucking time. Just like continuously. But we never hear a lot about female directors.
I mean, like Patty Jenkins and a couple like that.
Catherine Bigelow.
Catherine Bigelow.
The biggest one. Yeah.
She's friggin' rocked. But anyway.
Who was the one that did?
She kicked the hell out of her ex-husband.
I mean, Point Break. She made it.
I'm talking Kurt Locker versus Avatar. Like.
Oh, yeah, that too. But I love when I'm like, oh, yeah, Point Break is totally a feminist film. And then I'm like, because Catherine Bigelow directed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she basically takes the whole genre and just spins it upside down and says, I'm doing this, so congratulations. But I see what you mean. At the same time, I do think women show up in film all the time, but they don't show up in Hollywood all the time. And sometimes I wonder why they would want to, based on what Hollywood puts out, because I know I wouldn't want to show up in Hollywood all the time if I put out the same crap every year after year after year after year. But at the same time, I think that it would be possibly refreshing to have more women as leads in films that do make money. And I think that they can do it.
Oh, it's proven. Star Wars. Force Awakens.
Yep.
Oh, that's more of Star Wars, though.
Yeah.
It's still an
ensemble
lead
film.
Female.
Sure,
it
is. Lead, but there are multiple leads in that film. That's the other thing. I mean, there is a whole... That is the exception. I'll give you that.
Okay.
I think another example, which is not as a strong example, is Lucy. Hurt Locker.
Oh, no, sorry. I'm sorry. Zero Dark Thirty.
Zero Dark Thirty? Sure, but even that was like an ensemble.
Lucy, again, and that speaks to Scarlett Johansson's pull.
Sure.
And that's why we need a Black Widow film, but we don't have it for some reason. Because she could seriously bring in tons of money from that Black Widow film, but instead they choose to make a third Thor movie with Chris Hemsworth shirtless.
Definitely. He'll definitely be shirtless.
So what's your problem with this then?
What's my problem with what?
I thought you loved seeing Chris Hemsworth shirtless.
Oh, yeah. No, I just want I just want a Black Widow film too. I mean,
he wants
Thor
shirtless in every Marvel film.
Every Marvel film.
Every film, period.
Every film, somehow work him into every movie.
At the
somewhere.
Very least, have like a nice like glamour shot of him shirtless.
Yeah,
yeah,
just hold it up for a second.
Like,
okay,
like Will Smith in the Independence Day Resurgence. Just have him like as a portrait up on the wall somewhere. I mean, why not? If
then,
you can do it,
then hundreds of years later, aliens will invade the Earth and think we obsessed over this guy who's in every film for some reason shirtless.
Which is highly possible anyway. I mean, but
in the Black
Panther
movie, Chris Hemsworth shirtless eating a banana, just like. Walks across
eats a banana
right
is
in
very,
front of the camera,
very suggestive,
and just like walks out the scene.
What if he's eating like a peach instead?
And over here, he's like,
is he
movie of the year right here?
it would be hard to discern if every movie had Chris Hemsworth shirtless.
Yes, it would be very hard to decide what wins the Oscar that year, or the Independent Spirit Award. It would make up for a lot better competition. Anyway, my point is that if you paid $1 million for him every time he was shirtless, he would be a millionaire by
the first movie.
By the first times 300. So he would do that, I'm sure. So we have to come to an agreement in Hollywood. Anyway, that's a little off topic.
Sure.
I think you're trying to wrap up.
Yeah.
Totally.
And we are
like
fucking that
ago.
Up.
Honestly, overall, I wouldn't recommend it if you're trying to get anything of a nod to the old films. I mean, the cameos are really bad. So,
yeah.
There's nothing for you. If you're curious, I mean, go for it. You're going to just feel the same way I do, maybe. It's good that there is some kids interested in it. Like, a lot of the people I've seen on social media, they said their daughters are the biggest fan. They had a great time, and they loved Kate McKinnon's character. So, fuck. It'll be one of those films they come back on, like, oh, that was kind of shitty. Because we have those as an adult. Anyway, those are the films we talk about today. We're going to discuss a little more about the Maine International Film Festival, as well as some other topics next episode.
Yeah, later this week.
Episode 20, next week.
Next week.
Next episode.
Next episode. Because next week, we're probably going to return with our communal movie house.
Yep.
House.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
1973 Japanese J-horror.
That's yeah.
A little quick refresher
which,
on what that
I
is.
I have not seen, but I want to see it. My brother owns a copy of the Criterion. And I
that's
was like, I was super excited to watch it one day. And then I forget what we ended up watching instead, but we watched something else. But yeah.
Garfield, House, A Tale of Two Kitties.
Tale of Two Kitties is the better one.
Yeah, I was going to say that is better
that
than
That is
far House.
Better than... Yes.
It's better than House.
Yes, better than all 9 seasons.
He made that joke last time too.
I know. I listened to the podcast and got caught up.
Come You're on. A fan?
Holy
I'm a,
shit.
I'm one of the 19 followers potentially.
Damn.
Actually,
potentially.
Okay,
if you maybe
subscribe, just subscribe now.
We'll get 20 eventually.
Send us an email. I'll give you $5.
Word.
That's true.
Still up. All right.
Straight up true.
I thought August denied it, but okay. Yeah, speaking of email, notquitepod@gmail.com. If you have any suggestions for topics or movies, we sometimes come to the table here with nothing. So it's good to have some some options. So
sometimes
let us know.
We're scrambling for a movie to watch.
Right, right. And of course, follow us on Facebook, Not Quite Hollywood. Very simple to find. And yeah, John will return next week. We also have a special guest as well. We have a fourth seat.
We have a fourth seat?
My co-conspirator for We Need Movies, Brandon Doyne, will be here.
Oh my Jesus, we're just getting like guest after
guest.
Well,
Brandon's a celebrity. I'm just a writer. No one cares about me.
Come on.
Like, they didn't invite me back.
Yeah, follow Joel on Bangor Daily News sometimes. He's a vlogger, contributor.
I'm a contributor sometimes. But yes, yeah, I am. But I'm not as famous as Brandon.
Brandon is a, you know,
Brandon
TV
famous,
personality.
Built like a superhero. It's fine, you know, whatever.
Do you have some kind of affection for Brandon we should mention next week?
No, I'm just a fan.
Mm-hmm.
Just a fan.
If he was shirtless in every film, would you be happy? Oh, no.
No!
Does Brandon listen to this podcast?
He does.
Probably. No. Brandon's cool dude. Period.
Brandon shirtless 2016.
Damn.
Yeah, that's all I got.
And on that note.
On that note.
This was Not Quite Hollywood. We always taper off at the end here. I'm Jamie.
I'm August.
And I'm Joel.
Yay.
With a shirt on.
Shirt on. It's coming off soon.
It is really hot in here, but
yes, that's why we're
dragging at the end. Thank you for listening, guys.
Bye, later.